You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary.
So the price of gas, how does it affect me?
It affects how I drive. I am considerate where I go because I need to save my gas.
It's affecting my car purchase. I bought a diesel engine because the price of diesel is much cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, I have to put it in the Prius. Obviously, if I had my choice, I wouldn't use it in any way, shape, or form, but there's no real way around that at this point, unfortunately.
You heard those drivers just now, and Labor Day weekend gas prices are the lowest they've been in 11 years. The thing is, about 80% of the price of gas depends on the price of oil. And oil prices, well, they're not as easy to calculate as you might think. This week, oil bounced around near $44 a barrel. To understand how the heck that price is set, we've got Marketplace's Scott Tong from our sustainability desk. Welcome back.
Good to talk to you. Nice to be back.
All right, let's upset all those economic laws of supply and demand. Not completely, but
okay.
Will you explain to me how setting the price of oil is more complicated?
Well, it is crazy complicated. As soon as you had me prepare for this, my brain started to spin as I did research. But let's talk about this. Supply and demand, it's mostly supply and demand, right? How much oil is in the market in the world and how many of us want to buy it? And then there's a negotiation and there's a price and we work off that price. But here's the however, that the interesting part is it's not just oil sellers and oil users who are in the market, right? We have all these other market participants who don't touch the stuff at all. And sometimes they're known as the evil speculators, right? These are investors, these are hedge funds, etc. And so especially when prices swing wildly, they contribute to that. If they think, oh, you know what? OPEC just decided they're going to pump a lot more oil. They're like, well, there's going to be a glut and prices are going to go down, so we're going to anticipate prices going down. And so they can contribute to this herd, right, which is more than just the physical supply and demand. But speculators have this terrible name, right? We always want to blame them when something happens. This is the trade-off that we make with speculators in the market is very often they serve a great function in the market. That is, if I'm buying and the prices are going all over the place and I want to buy at a certain price next December, you know, just so I can lock it in, I might not always find somebody out there, but if you have all these speculators, you have all these market participants, and I'm going to be able to find somebody to be on the other side of that trade. Similarly, if I'm selling...
So really more buyers and sellers.
Yeah, it's more of a crowded market. You have more participants. And if I'm a buyer or a seller, it just makes it that much easier for me to find somebody to take what I'm offering at a certain price. And in those cases, they're kind of these financial market superheroes. At other times, they're part of the herd, and we get to blame them a lot for, you know, these big violent swings in the market.
Can you explain to me what is baked into the price of oil from the moment it comes out of the ground till it reaches those charts that you see on a trading floor pit?
Okay, so right, you have underground these compressed dinosaurs, plants, right, that are underground there, and you know there's a lot of hydrogen and a lot of carbon, so they're hydrocarbons, and we find them and we dig them up. Well, there are a lot of people who are involved in bringing that to the places, to the place where it's traded, and they make a bunch of money along the way, right? You have the geologists who look down there and can find it with these fancy x-rays. You have, of course, the drillers and the drill rig operators. You have bankers who finance all of this stuff. And then after you drill it, you may have to deliver it through a pipeline or by barge or by truck. Those are all people who get some of that money in addition to whoever owns that land. It's mostly private property here in the United States. And, of course, there are taxes. So you have the state and the federal government, in some cases, taking some of that money, too. So when a barrel of oil is sold, effectively, a whole lot of people see some of that money because, you know, that molecule, that hydrocarbon, has taken a pretty long trip along the way and everybody gets a cut.
You have also talked to me about the concept of inelasticity. What is that and how does it work?
Inelasticity is, it explains a lot of how prices are so volatile. So if you go back to Thanksgiving when OPEC said, you know, surprise, we're going to drill more oil into the world. There's going to be an oversupply. Well, oil markets don't react very quickly to that. So if there's more, right, if we take the Tong household, we have a lot of soccer carpools, right? But if there's more oil on the market, I'm not going to drive more carpools, right? If my car can take 15 gallons, that 16th gallon, it means nothing to me, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the 16th piece of cheesecake means a lot to me, but the 16th gallon of oil means nothing to me, and that's the problem. And so you have all these sellers saying, anybody want oil? You want oil? How about, it was at 100. How about 90? How about 80? How about 40? So that's what happens when markets just don't adjust very quickly, and they call it inelasticity. It also works on the supply side. If demand really goes up, it's not like the suppliers can just flip a switch and say, boom, you know, oil. There's a long runway in order to produce it. And because, you know, the buyers and the sellers are kind of locked in, they're not very flexible. They're not very elastic. And that helps to explain why prices go crazy sometimes in the oil markets.
Marketplace's Scott Tong from our sustainability desk. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.